Good morning. Welcome to Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket. George DiGiani, Train Station Fitness Show, 6:50 in the morning. I have an incredible guest in the studio, Ford Baker, who contacted me because he has this burning desire inside to tell his story. He felt it necessary to share it on air to help others who struggle with his former unhealthy habits. Ford Baker is a formerly overfat person, lost 150 pounds, and he wants to share his stories to help others who judge overfat people for eating horribly and not exercising and let them know they already understand, they're fully aware of how they look and that they're not healthy. Ford Baker has lost over 150 pounds, and it's been at least 3 years that he's kept this weight off. We're going to learn the mind of a former fat guy, the impetus behind his change, how he changed his attitude toward himself and perception of food, and how he committed to positive change and persisted through hard times or challenges, because we all have challenges. Equally as important, Ford stayed consistent in his effort to keep his weight off and be the example he needed to be for his family and others who struggle with their health. So I'd like for you, Ford, to share with all of us who don't have 150 pounds to lose, what goes through the mind of an overfat person and their relationship with food?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
You know, my personal story, if I go back to when I was a kid, if I had a headache, my mom would give me aspirin and say, this will make you feel better. If I had a stomach ache, she'd give me some Pepto-Bismol and say, this will make you feel better. And if I had a bad day at school, she'd give me some Cheetos and sit me down in front of Gilligan's Island and say, you know, this will make you feel better. And it's not that my mom did a bad job or anything. I mean, I did the same thing with my kids. You want them to feel better and all. But I just mistook that information as, this is good. This is, I like this. This makes me feel better. And if and the way I'm wired is, if, you know, a bowl of Cheetos does a good job, then a bag of Cheetos would be even better. And so that idea that I was going to eat to feel better and change how I felt very much was a driving factor. So I used it to, if I had a bad day, or that process continued through my life, and it became things that, even if I had a good day, oh, let's celebrate, and it became anything that, you know, it wasn't just Cheetos, it becomes cheeseburgers, anything you can deep fry and cover in gravy, that made me feel good, and I liked that, and that's why I ate.
So when did you start gaining all this weight? Were you a fat kid?
You know, I would say mentally, I have a very, I don't have a whole lot of different image of myself now than I did then, and then I did at 360 pounds. I've still got, you know, 20 pounds I'd like to lose, 25 pounds I'd like to lose, and it still bothers me. So that mindset that I've got, that I'm a fat guy, is why I still say we, even though, you know, for the first time in 25 years, I'm not technically obese anymore. I'm just, you know, I'm only overweight.
But let's go back to when you were a child. Were you a fat kid?
You know, I was husky. You
okay.
know,
and were you bullied or made fun of?
I was sensitive, so I don't necessarily know that I was that I was bullied for being fat as much as because I could be an easy target.
So you're being politically correct right now. I'm asking you specifically, were people making fun of you for being overfat as a kid?
I don't think I was that overfat.
Good. Good. The reason I'm asking is because I'm trying to understand how an adult allows themselves to become as overfat as you did. Did it start at a young age? And if at a young age you shared with me the reward of food, whether you had a bad day or didn't turn into a good day, was just this buildup over time, that's one story. But it's another story if it comes from how you were made fun of when you were younger, right? And how you now are living this life from when you were young and kind of stuck in a story, if you will.
I always envisioned myself as fat. I don't think that people look back necessarily and think of me as fat as I was as I got. I was always driven to feel better by what I ate and not trying to – I didn't push myself a lot. My mom was very driven, and so the idea that I wouldn't participate in athletics was – even though I was a horrible athlete, I went to a small private school, so I stayed on the football team, and therefore I was active enough that I held it off. When I got to college and that went away, I began – I quickly went from, you know, 195, 200 to – you know, 240 pounds by the time I graduated.
So did any, I venture to guess I know the answer now, but did any particular event happen that made you gain much more weight as an adult, or was it just this constant?
Oh, I laugh. My son was, when he was little, was in the backyard, and I was jumping on the trampoline and with him, and he backed up. He could have been 4 years old, and he, like, looks under the trampoline, looks up at me, and he looks under there again. He looks at me and says, "How old are you, Dad?" And I said, "No, I'm 33. And he looks under there again. He goes, "You're 34. You'd hit the ground." And so it was just this gradual trend that I'm on this, you know, slide up. And, you know, here a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, whatever it was, had noticed, you know, the older you get, the fatter you get.
So one of the things I've said over many years of being here is to try to help motivate people who are in that bad place is – we often don't want to do things that take care of us, that nurture us. We're not strong enough for us. However, if you're a nurturer or you really, really are focused on spending a lot of quality time with your family, your children, and so on, let's focus on how you can be that mother, father, guardian that you need to be for that child. Because when you're 150 pounds overweight the way you were, I don't think you want to get on the ground and play with your child and then get up again to go get them something they asked that they needed and come back down and get on the ground again because it's too difficult. And so therefore you might want to sit on the couch and have them come to you. Or I've just seen this over time, and it's like, don't you want to be around for your children? And isn't it, here's the powerful question. Isn't it selfish of you to treat this yourself the way you treat yourself and have a heart attack or stroke or die for some reason because of how you treated yourself and have left these young children without a father or a mother because of your selfish ways of not taking care of you? So, and I'm not, I don't mean you in particular. I mean people who are unhealthy. So there's different ways in my experience when working with people to change their behaviors is to understand what their motivating factors are. What would motivate them to get out of their own way and help themselves? And sometimes it's painting this picture with children or grandchildren or something else that's most important to them that will motivate them and help them to become healthy for someone else until they can do it for themselves later on. Maybe a backward way of thinking, but it's worked.
You know, I don't think I thought that way. It wasn't that I didn't want to lose weight. It was always more that I felt I had to do weight. And you've got to do this for you. I'm so glad my dad died when he was 54. I'm 53. And I have a grandson, and I've met him and seen him. And my dad's grandson is named after him, and he's never met him. So, you know, that's, I'm certainly, it's a motivating factor to play with my grandson. And I'm able to do that as well. When my kids were that young, it wasn't like I wasn't out there trying and things like that. But I never had the idea that I could. You know, that was the whole problem.
That you could what?
That I could lose the weight.
Got it.
I had a million excuses on why I couldn't lose weight. But, you know, one of the driving factors was the whole, I described it as one shade of gray, but if I'm not going to eat Cheetos for a whole year, if we use the Cheetos again, and I get to that 365th day and I eat a Cheeto, oh, I screwed up completely, and I'll eat the whole bag. And so I'd go on a diet, and I'd, you know, Weight Watchers, whatever it was I was trying to do, and I would, you know, break over or whatever, I'd deviate from the path, and I would say, "See, I've done it again." And it was just one failure, and I'm out. And so,
isn't it interesting how we perceive what we do or life when you think having a Cheeto or a bag of Cheetos is considered failure when whatever you've done for the past 9 or 10 months has been successful? And you can't
But never been – I never made 9 months, but I was very much the basketball player that missed a shot and then said – oh, my gosh, I'll never take another shot.
Right.
Well, you know, he's no longer going to be a basketball player on any team if he doesn't put up a shot when he's got it. So that fear of failure just kind of led to this continued, you know, as soon as I failed, I'd go right back to what I was doing before. And failing a little bit was failing completely. Don't give me gray. You know, I'm black and white. I need that.
Are you still black and white today, or is there a gray area?
Very much so.
That's kind of dangerous.
No, I agree completely. But the thing that's happened is, I'm not going to say here right now that this process started in 2012, and I haven't eaten a Cheeto since then, or I haven't had a cheeseburger since then. In fact, I think I've had, you know, probably this year, probably 3 cheeseburgers. So. But that would never have happened in a million years before. That first cheeseburger, I would have been complete failure. Right. So I've learned that I've learned to shorten the process of what, you know, this whole today I can is very much driven around the idea.
So then
that,
you do have gray area. You may not recognize it.
I agree. I probably have more gray area than I recognize.
Because the danger in not having that gray area is if something were to prevent you from being able to nurture yourself through exercise – and you're that black and white person, your chances of going to the other side completely are quite high because of not giving yourself a break.
I have a pinched nerve in my neck that creates a great deal of pain in my arm right now. And so the idea, and it's been going on for, you know, about 6 weeks now, and the idea that I couldn't exercise made a lot of sense. Like, how am I going to put my hand on the handlebars? So I very much went there, and that's why I said, you know, hey, I'm trying to reestablish this relationship I got with food and what I'm doing, and that's kind of where we connected. As I got back and said, you know, I'm gonna do another 21-day body makeover to make sure while I'm not able to exercise. What I found out is that I still can ride. It's very unusual. I rode 150 miles last weekend over a 4-day period and had no pain in my arm. But as soon as I got to the office and typed on a computer for 3 hours. As soon as I sat down in the afternoon, typed on a computer for 3 hours, I was starting to ache and feel it and things like
that.
Did
you ever chalk this up when you were over fat to genes?
Oh, very much so. I have the worst metabolism you'd ever meet. You could measure my metabolism with an hourglass. So I was another excuse I had. You know,
another
I just had
excuse.
Yes,
and I think there are, while it does exist, we know genetically there's a very, very small percentage of people who fit in that mold. Unless you try to get out of that, then how do you know that, or unless you test, right? You don't know if your genes say that you have these predispositions to being over fat or obese or whatever you want to call it. And that's quite important.
I'm also in a business that gives me a predisposition to being fat. I mean, I'm a CPA, so and I do taxes. Every client of mine in a small business format like I'm in, every client of mine essentially has the same deadline, April 15th. We get the business stuff done March 15th or extended in April 15th. We've got to let them know how much they owe. And every client I have has the same deadline. So that working 100 hours a week and things like that, the traps that I fell into, well, CPAs are the highest risk category you can be in. It's worse than window washers and parachute guys. I mean, it's just, we are a fat group of guys because we sit around for 90 days in a row and get out of whatever habit we got into and it's every, you know, it starts over every 4 months. So it's a bad cycle.
So coming up next, we're going to talk more with Ford Baker, who contacted me and said, George, I've got to share my story with you. I've lost over 150 pounds. I've kept this weight off for over 3 years now. And I want to tell you how you were an integral part of that process, which I'm still not aware of what that is. We didn't rehearse any of this. And then some more of your story. I want to know from you what your new version of or your new perception of food is today. How did you change that? And then I want to talk about how you committed to change. And if you ever sat down and identified all the responsibilities that came along with the desire of this profound change in your life. We'll talk about that coming up next. Also, make sure to check me out on podcast, iTunes, enter George DiGiani, rate and subscribe the show. This show will be on there sometime today. 705 Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket. 714 Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket. George DiGiani, Train Station Fitness Show. My guest is Ford Baker. And Ford, out of the blue, contacted me because he had this burning desire to share a story about his life, how he lost over 150 pounds, and he's kept it off over the last 3 years. What's really interesting, Ford, is that we have never met or interacted that I'm ever aware of. Have we?
No.
And so the fact that you're
here... I'm sorry, one time...
We did?
I tried to reach out for a while. I just imagine you get a lot of... I didn't say for a while. I tried to reach out. I did an article in Mind Body Green, and I contacted you after with the link, and you replied, "That's great," but that was about it. I'm gonna imagine that you get
I get tons and tons of emails. Yeah, so, you know what's difficult? I'm glad you're saying this. Is there are a lot of people who say, "Use me as your before and after testimonial." Can't tell you how many people I've gotten with that, and I can't tell you how many times I've been let down because they don't fulfill their obligation. And then you get this big buildup. And so, you know, perceived value is so unbelievably important, where when someone pays for your services or your products and it's uncomfortable for them, they're more apt to comply with whatever it is to be successful than when something's given to them. Would you agree?
Absolutely. No.
So I got a lot of that over the years, and so it's really hard to be discerning with who's actually serious and who has the persistence, the true determination like you do. I don't want to say did because you continue to have this. I find it interesting. You've lost this weight, and you didn't have to be on one of these stupid shows that actually makes me quite angry. The Biggest Loser, to be yelled at, to feel ashamed to by these so-called trainers. Trainers don't do that. And if you do that, you just have this big insecurity about you, an ego, to make fun of another person who's already struggling in their life. They know how they look. They know how they feel. And that really made me very angry. I could only watch half of an episode. And so to see someone like yourself do this, take this challenge on your own without having this shame and this yelling at you is a huge reward and a big compliment to you and courage for you.
I don't think you have to be on the show to feel like that happens. I can't watch an episode. I've never watched an episode. Just seeing the blurbs and thrown into the category is automatically a loser. Like the whole group's a loser. I just can't watch the show. Being fat is the only thing that it's still politically correct to make fun of. Okay, so we don't watch the Little Rascals anymore because they were really offensive toward an entire race of people and the jokes that they told and the stories they told. And so, you know, they've been bought up and they're not showed. But they also showed the fat kid eating with his hands, eating chocolate all over his face. He's uncontrollable around food. And that happened in the Black and Whites, and then it happens again in the Bad News Bears when I was a kid, you know, with the fat kid as the catcher, and he's slow and he's stupid, and then it happens again in not Smoking the Bandit, with the Boss Hog and the I can't think of what the name.
Porky's.
No, it's, but you know, the Boss Hog is the bad guy, and they got Daisy Duke and all those folks. They're really pretty people. They're the good guy, and the Boss Hog is this fat guy that Duke's a hazard.
Yeah,
and he eats with his hands, and he does that, and it goes on today, and we can still make fun of fat people. So we get the idea that we're pigs, we're hogs, we're one step down. It's okay to be laughed at. We are. There's a mental drop down that we have. And if I told a racially insensitive joke and said that, it's not going to make ethnically diverse person from me. How hard do we have to work around this? But it's not going to make a black person blacker. But if you tell a fat joke and a fat guy hears it, he's going to eat. And so if at least I would, if it's going to make me feel better. And so it's this just continual cycle that you're in. And
some people might say, I'm certainly not one of these people, but I tried to create as much conversation around uncomfortable topics that I've heard from others as I can in these shows. And some people might say, well, if you're acting a certain way as an overfat person, then do you deserve it? Maybe you deserve to have people make fun of you. I you know, I'm totally against that. You know that I just told you how much that bothered me. But there are people who might say, well, if you're acting a certain way and you continue to eat that way and you know you're doing that, why not have willpower? And I don't think people realize what's in the mind of someone who's struggling, whether you're an alcoholic, you're depressed, you're a drug addict, you're overfat. And I think once we understand that person, we can feel compassion for them. But until we do, we tend to judge them.
Food played one role. Taste good, make me feel better. And that driving factor. That's the only thing I understood about food. And so anytime you go on a diet and they say, oh, it tastes great, well, the diet's going to be a failure because the worst cheeseburger in the world's the mustard Whopper with cheese, as far as I'm concerned. Sorry, Burger King. But that's the worst one. It's still way better than whatever's best on Nutrisystems or whatever the best tasting food on that world is. So if I'm valuing things only on how it tastes, I'm always going to be over on this and choose the cheeseburger. And so,
me want a cheeseburger, by the way.
So
did you ever recognize any responsibilities? Did you ever sit down and say, okay, I am going to go for a health and fitness goal for myself. I want to lose X amount of pounds, and this time I'm fully committed to myself. Here are the responsibilities that come along with this new challenge in my life. Did you ever sit down and identify those?
The responsibilities being investing time in it.
But not how it would affect others.
No, my wife just joined the journey with me. She was a leader in it. She was the part of the impetus for change. I mean, they were praying for me.
I love that.
So,
because you know how difficult it is? There's usually discord and separation when one spouse decides to make a change for the better and the other one wants to stay comfortable.
She's never even been obese. I mean, I way outpunted my coverage. So she's a beautiful lady inside and out, and she was just along for the ride, and she
love
was so
that.
Excited to see it happen.
Oh, I love
and
that.
I hesitate to say I couldn't do it because I had to do it. Mm. She couldn't take one pedal. She couldn't run. She couldn't take a walk. She couldn't do any of that. But she was there. You know, I rode from Canada to Mexico on a bicycle. And if you don't think that I had a wife that was, you know, SAG support and extractions when traffic got, and all of that stuff all along the way, that ride would have been, you know, me dragging a wagon behind me and all that. And that would have been horrible for me. So I just love to get out and ride. And she just made it to the next hotel, and she was running at the time, and she would do a bucket list run and wait on me and do tours or whatever. And I'd ride my miles. And so
would you say then the family that exercises and eats together stays together?
They started the process by praying for me. I mean, wow. You know, it's just, you know, my son and his small group at church, you know, they get together and start praying that something wakes me up, that something happens. And my wife's doing it. So everybody was on board before I realized I was even on the deal.
So you were saying earlier that your wife was the impetus for change. I want to hear all about it now. What made Ford Baker change, lose this weight?
Well, you know, I preface with the idea that if you and I got into a business relationship, and we had to go somewhere on an airplane together, and we get on the plane, and the stewardess says, hey, this is going to make you more comfortable, and she gives you a neck roll and a blanket, I probably had to back off. And the impetus for change, it came because they were praying. And I almost staged a conversation about starting a cleanse. And I'm walking through the kitchen, and they talk about a cleanse, and I go, well, you know, I was a P1. I'm in the car all the time, working on the weekends. I'd hear George DeJani, and I was like, oh, there's this guy on the ticket. He does a cleanse. We're going to find out what his is and do that. They're like, sure, whatever works. So we do the 21-day body makeover. And we sign up. I do the 21-day body makeover. That black and white part, I could handle it, you know. And so I've just gone to the eye doctor a couple weeks before, and I wear contacts to see far away, and I'd have a reader to see a computer and a different reader to read with. And in the middle of this process, you know, my vision just reading with the readers, I can't do it anymore. And I get home and I got bifocals. And I mean, literally, like 2 weeks into the process, I wear bifocals at home. I don't work on the computer that much there. And I'm trying to read. I can't read. I pick them up and I look down and I can read a little better. So I set an appointment with my eye doctor. And we go in and he says, if you, it looks like you've lost a little weight. I'm literally 2 weeks in, literally the last day of the, or the second last day of the cleanse. Tell him I have, and I'm not going to finish before the break. But he pulls a picture up of my eye and explains how he can see the high blood pressure, how he can see the hardening of the arteries. And then he focuses on a brown spot in my eye and he says, see this brown spot? That's the high blood sugar. And yours looks good. And he pulls up a stock photo from Wikipedia or whatever. And see, this is an eye I couldn't treat. This brown spot there is so bad that he'd have to go to the Texas Eye Institute every month and get a shot in his eye to keep from going blind.
Wow.
And my near vision has returned completely because my blood sugar's dropped. I wear glasses in the bottom of it. And so since that date, I'm still 100 pounds overweight at the time. But my blood sugar's dropped enough that my near vision has returned in 2 weeks. So these results may not be typical, but these results are mine. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, I did this. I'll just do the cleanse for the rest of my life. That's
right.
I cannot stand the idea of a shot in the eye. And I'm on board.
So coming up next, I want you to expand upon that because for selfish reasons, I want to know more about. I don't know that you've ever ordered my full body cleanse, so thank you for sharing that. That's important. But I want to learn more about why you were successful on it. You talked about the gray area, but what type of success you had on it? And then what did that lead to? Why did you lose 150 pounds? You didn't lose 150 pounds in my cleanse. So how did you continue on? Because there's an end date on that program. How did you continue? People often, the number one question when people use my 21-day body makeover, what do I eat now? What do you mean, what do you eat now? You keep eating healthy, right? It's all healthy food. You're not denying anything other than your cheeseburger and chips. So let's talk about that. And then also I want to talk about more of your backstory and the process that you wanted to share with everybody. Coming up next, 726 Sports Radio, 1310 The Ticket. Lost over 150 pounds. He's kept it off for 3 years, and he's telling us how he did it. So the last thing we left off with is you said – in the very beginning of your quest, you used my 21-day body makeover program. How much weight did you lose? And from there, let's move forward about how you currently perceive food today.
I've never been a weigher. I still don't weigh today, so I can't tell you.
Got it.
Just from being at the doctor's office, once you get over a certain weight, they have to kind of put you in the cattle call.
I'm
in the doctor every month, so constantly trying, my weight's going up and down, trying to stay off the big giant scales in
sure.
the back. But, you know, I feel like I probably had lost 40, 50 pounds in the first couple of months
right.
by just, you know, the next thing that happened is now food is nutrition. It did something for me. It improved my eyesight. And I saw this other horrid thing down the road of getting a needle in my eye. Unfortunately, we don't see a lot of it as a result of where we're going to go, because we all die before we ever get to the point that, you know, our heart quits, or, you know, all the other problems we create get in the way of ever actually living long enough to need the shot in our eye. So we don't hear as much about it, but that was certainly like this big black and white moment where I realized that food is doing something that the pharmaceutical industry would never be able to do. And I'd taken metformin for 15 years.
What is metformin?
And that's my blood sugar medication.
Right.
So,
and you're off of metformin now.
Yes, I was off. I was told I'd never be off insulin, and I never took insulin.
You're going to be told that off of people who are ignorant that didn't go to school for nutrition.
That's agreed.
If your doctor,
if you ask your doctor the next time you see him, what nutritionist should I see, and he doesn't know the answer, you need a different doctor.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I agree with that, because
they don't always have relationships
with nutritionists. It's just that I would not ask a nutritionist medical questions, and I would not ask doctors who didn't go to school for nutrition questions. Leave it separate.
That's anyway. I'd been told I'd never get off it, and that process that okay, food can do this. I started walking. I started walking the dog. I walked a little further. As I walked further and further, I ultimately decide if I get 4 miles, and less, when I get to 4 miles in an hour, then I'm going to try something more. I don't know what something more is, but Jim Calhoun falls off his bicycle at the and breaks his hip, 72-year-old coach of University of Connecticut, and somebody on the ticket or ESPN says, that guy needs a different hobby. He's too old to ride a bike. And I'm thinking in my head, when I'm 72, I want somebody to say that about me. You know, I don't want to break my hip falling off the rascal reaching for Cheetos at the Walmart. So I decide I'm going to ride. I got an old bike. I take it to Richardson Bike Mart. They fix it up for me. And I get out and start riding. And that is the impetus. I mean, that in the back of my mind, that whole time, that idea of that I'm getting better is taking place. But I'm by no means in good shape. But the metformin starts dropping, which is the Actis comes off, which is another blood sugar medication. I'm off the blood pressure medication. I can't remember. They make up these words, but I can't remember what I was taking. But they start coming off rapidly. But in that process that I'm doing it, I ride and bonk for the first time, which is where you just run out of energy. You don't have anything left. I call this guy who's my biking mentor, and And, you know, he says, what did you eat? I said, well, I took a banana with me. And he was like, he says, no, what did you eat the day before you ride? What you eat the day before you ride is more important than what you eat on the ride. And, you know, all of a sudden this idea where I, you know, it took so long to feel better eating right, I can now, I'm talking about a 24-hour period, and the food starts to take on a different process. Food becomes fuel, you know. And so in the world now, I've now grasped a relationship. I'm starting to grasp a relationship where how it tastes is I still like it to taste good, but how it tastes is the number, food is fuel is number one, food is nutrition is number two, and food tastes good is number three. With that mindset, and that's how you're working, then the decisions start to, you know, I'm going to ride faster tomorrow. I'm going to eat better today. I'm going to do better today. And that's why I think cycling is so beneficial. It's hard to get on a bike and put on Lycra, and you don't have to the first time. But no matter what you do, it's difficult to be on a bike, and you feel like the fat guy on the bike. But it's easy on the knees, and it's easy to measure. It gets your cardio up. By the end of 2012, I'm off every one of the blood pressure medications. I'm off all of the blood sugar medication that a doctor had previously told me I would never be off of in my life. And he's at the Cooper Clinic now. So this guy in a white coat tells me this is going to happen. And just eating right and exercise, it starts to come off. By the 2013, I'm off the cholesterol medication in June. And I just kept that drive just kept going. Eating right and exercising starts to go hand in hand. And you had to eat right first. You had to get that right relationship. But then as you start to exercise, it just feeds off at each other. And it has to continue on that way. And that is very, very much what happened.
How did you know you were ready to commit to you this time? It's really, really difficult when someone gives surface answers. Oh, I'm ready for change, la, 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 la. But results are what matter. That's how you know. And consistency is what really matters. How did you know this time you were ready for consistent, persistent change?
One thing I did was I posted on Facebook that I rode, and I said, you know, I'd post the little app, you know, that said I rode, and I did it to create sort of an accountability. I didn't want to quit, you know, and I didn't want to fail. So I built in some things. I built in, you know, when you talk about responsibility, I built in times where I wouldn't let people interrupt me, and I was going to focus and do this. So I would work and do my thing there. Love but when it. I'm on a bike, I'm not going to answer text messages. Love I'm not it. Going to get my phone. I'm not going to do
because you decided you were more important. And if you can't take care of you, you can't take care of others.
I'm not going to be there very long to take care of others. I'm right. Very good at what I do.
Right.
And so people want my time, and they want that. And it's important. And so I started to learn the importance of fences and building a fence around the time at work.
Good
and I'm not going to screw around with anything else. And I'm going to focus on what I'm doing at work. And so I literally have two phones. I have a work phone and a personal phone. And so I don't check those things. And when I get out on the bike ride, I don't screw around with work.
Okay. So did we already talk about the one person who inspired you?
Doug Walker was integral, but the idea that the regular guy also, like Craig Miller from the Ticket, if you listen to him talk, he never talks about this great athletic prowess he had when he was a kid. But now he's riding and he's doing all these wonderful things. So the idea that the normal everyday guy, not David Vivora or Emmett Smith or something like that, that I could never aspire to be, but Craig Miller made sense to me. He's a guy that was just, you know, he's just an average Joe and he's doing incredible things on a bike now. I could do the same thing.
So a lot of people who are in your former place of being over fat find it difficult to deal with challenges and setbacks. How do you currently deal with that now so it doesn't derail you?
It's just part of the process. Life's not fair. You know, I used to tell my kids that fair day only came once a year and you get to go downtown and ride roller coasters and eat corny dogs. And today is not fair day. And so my hands are tied. And they hate that. But that's what I said. And so when the first time I had the setback, you know, I immediately crawled up in the shell. Oh, it's not fair. I worked too hard for this and I didn't meet my goal and I felt horrible. It took a while to get out of it, but it's a funk, but I kept.
So I want to get into your Forrest Gump moment. You rode your bike from Canada to Mexico? Are you crazy? Is that a typical ride, or is it just something you decided to do? Following you?
No, it was just my wife and I and Doug came out and rode from San Francisco to L.A. with me. But the reason I did it, I didn't know how to promote it. I didn't want to do it. But Today I Can is this thing I've started, todayican.net, and it's where I've posted what I'm going through and kind of blogged and journaled. And that I did it to draw attention to the fact that this guy that is the worst athlete you'd ever meet in your life, that doesn't have time, that doesn't have all these kind of things, he can do this, and you can too. I would ride from Canada to Mexico if it would make a difference in one person's life. Somebody said, there's no way you're that benevolent. But it's just my heart breaks for the overweight because they are in the same bucket I was in. And so Today I Can is here 100%. 100% to be this thing that shows that you can't. It's not.
Tell people
you don't have
Today
to
I Can is though. And where do they find it?
It's a website that I've started. We're trying to build a community for people to go to that are in this spot, and they want to get advice,
support.
They want to get support. They don't want to be laughed at. They don't want to be the biggest loser, and they're not. But they can. And they have to get to the mindset that if this is what I'm going to wake up today, I'm going to ask God to give me help in making good decisions about what I eat and drink. I'm going to exercise. And if that works out, I'm going to do it again tomorrow. And that's the whole process. I never set out at the beginning of this thing and said, I'm going to ride 8,000 miles in 2014, including a trip from Canada to Mexico. If you'd have told me I had to do that to lose weight, I would have said, you're crazy. And you don't have to do that to lose weight. But one day at a time, one step at a time, it happened. And shortening that process down to I can never have another cheeseburger to I'm just not going to have one today makes it where if you fall off, I made a mistake. I'll try again tomorrow. That process makes sense.
Seems like to be the biggest hurdle where people in your former position beat themselves up.
Absolutely.
And so how do you support those people who go to Today I Can on Facebook or the website and let them know that it is okay and get beyond that belief that they have that it's not okay?
I try to put it in there in a blog. We've started on Strava a group that you can join called Today I Can. Strava is an app that you can use to measure walks and runs. And we want to the friends of mine want to be there to encourage the guys that sign up to do this or girls. That's it. There's no place to give money. There's no place to make money from being an accountant, not from being a bike rider. And I just want them to understand. I do everything I could to get out the message that today they can too.
You have 20 seconds. You have a bike giveaway. Can you tell us really fast?
We just gave away two bikes to CPAs for Making a goal and keeping it during tax season.
And
they're going to pick it up today at Richardson Bike Mart.
And are you giving another bike away?
They're actually picking up the bikes we gave away in tax season today at 12:30 at Richardson Bike Mart.
What name of the website again?
Todayican.net.
Todayican.net. And they can also find you under in Facebook, Today I Can.
Right.
Ford, you're a freaking incredible inspiration to everyone, because it doesn't matter whether you have weight to lose or not. If you have trouble with staying persistent and having a goal that helps you to help others as well, this message is for them. It's for everyone. It doesn't matter about losing weight or not. I don't care if it's smoking alcohol or whatever it is. I congratulate you. Great courage. And I wish you the best of luck. 745 Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.